Our next guest is Vern McKinley. He's an advisor to governments on financial sector policy and legal issues. He is a research fellow at the Independent Institute and has also completed policy work for the American Enterprise Institute and the Cato Institute, and has served as an alumni council member of the Fund for American Studies. He's the author of Financing Failure, A Century of Bailouts, which traces the history of financial institution bailouts in the United States. He has been credited with correctly predicting in 1997 that the structure of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would one day lead to the meltdown of the two institutions. At the time, he called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, quote, financial time bombs, end quote. He lives with his family in Ashburn, Virginia, and tonight we welcome him to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for the invitation.
Financing Failure, A Century of Bailouts, quote, closely examines the decisions behind the bailouts and reveals the untold story of what actually happened and how this relates to the history of the United States government intervention, end quote. How did this book come about?
Well, like everybody else, I was watching the whole mess in late 2008 and early 2009. I've worked in this area of banking supervision, and financial crises for the last 25 years, so I started doing some research. And as part of that, I decided to file what are called Freedom of Information requests, which is when you want to get documents or other information from the government. And so the initial ones I filed were with the Federal Reserve here in Washington and also the FDIC. And the Fed completely ignored me. They didn't give me anything in the initial months after I had made the request. The FDIC gave me some documents, but they were about 80 or 90% redacted, meaning they were whited out.
Yes.
And so I knew I was onto something when they were so lacking in transparency.
Yes.
And so I ended up filing a few lawsuits and a few more after that to try to get the details of the underlying bailouts to be the basis for the book.
Now, you describe what you call a standard pattern of financial crisis. Financial institutions approach failure, panic by regulators and members of Congress, and bailout legislation. Are the crises you examined as similar in causation as you found them to be in terms of how they played out?
Well, I think the underlying cause for all of these financial crises were government intervention, whether it was the or lack of intervention, as the case may be. In the 1930s, the Federal Reserve dropped the ball completely on monetary policy management. And in the 80s, obviously we had inflation and stagflation that caused a lot of the banking sector problems. And in the most recent crisis, we had this insane push during the 90s and the early part of the 2000s to put people in homes. There for about 30 years from the 60s to the early 90s, we had about 65% home ownership in the early 90s in the Clinton administration. They got this great idea to start to push that number up to about 70%. And they did it with a wide range of programs, whether it was Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the tax code to some extent, FHA, various HUD programs. And of course, when we got up to about the 70% mark was when we saw the whole bubble burst and everything just came crashing down. So definitely the government was behind the three major financial crises we've had the last 100 years. And they actually made it worse by some of their responses with the bailouts and that.
The most recent round of bailouts were characterized as either short-term loans to the financial industries or a giveaway of taxpayer money. What is a bailout in your view, and which perception is closer to the truth?
Well, I would say if you want a quick definition of a bailout, it's just where the government intervenes and tries to prevent failure in the sense of the legal sense, where the institution essentially goes through a bankruptcy-like process where it gets liquidated, assets sold, and claims paid. So the goal of a bailout is just to avoid that, because some people look at that as kind of an unwieldy process, and there's all these, I guess you would call them Chicken Little stories about how bad that situation would be. And, you know, you hear the stories about, well, we didn't really bail out Wall Street. We were really meaning to bail out Main Street. So I guess that would be a summary of what the whole idea of a bailout is, just to avoid that whole process of bankruptcy and such. As far as the choice between short-term loans versus the bailout of the fat cats, I think the true role of the government, primarily the central bank, is to give these short-term loans, whether it's for, you know, a month or two or a similar period. I mean, that's truly what the role of the central bank should be, and it shouldn't be given that kind of funding to problem institutions, ones that have bad management or that are on the brink of insolvency. It should be to let those poorly managed and insolvent banks fail, and then what you do is just extend short-term lending to the stronger institutions that are just having these little short-term problems. But they, of course, obviously didn't follow that directive, and we had long-term loans going to very poorly managed institutions. A lot of the loans that were made back in 2008 still haven't been completely paid off, whether you're talking about the Bear Stearns or AIG or Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will never get paid back. They're estimating that's going to be a few hundred billion to wind Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac down. So I would definitely say it's the latter of your two choices, that it was just a long-term situation where they bailed out poorly managed institutions, and that's the complete opposite of the classic idea of the government involvement in these financial crises.
Mm-hmm. Now, financing failure brings into question the conventional wisdom of the bailouts, one accepted not just by most economists, but even by free market conservatives, that they prevented a severe crisis and were therefore necessary and prudent. Steve Forbes, for example, defended the bailouts on this very show. Why do you think these supporters of the bailout got it wrong?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what Steve Forbes had said about the bailouts. I know he may have been a supporter of them, but I mean, I would simply say that I've done the legwork and all the research on these issues. I mean, the big story was, well, we have to save these banks, because if we don't, there's going to be all these knock-on effects. You're going to have like a domino effect, and all bad things are going to happen again. You know, we got to save Main Street type of language. And the four lawsuits that I have, I basically asked a simple question, which was, what bad things would happen if you let these institutions fail?
Mm-hmm.
And between the emails and the memos and the minutes from meetings, as best I can tell, there really was no basis to make that argument that all these bad things were going to happen. What you find is a lot of very disorganized and seat-of-the-pants type analysis by either the Federal Reserve or these other agencies. And as far as these thoughts about all the failures that were going to happen, there's really just no basis for it. There's a lot of talk about the general problems with the economy and a lot of wild speculation about what might happen, but there's really no connecting of the dots between, you know, this bank fails and then after that this is going to happen. I mean, there's just no direct connection. It was just, like I said, a lot of wild speculation, and there was really no analytical basis for all the arguments that were being made.
You touch upon another subject of debate, especially within conservative circles, which is whether the central bank or the Fed have a role to play, as you've touched on, in an appropriate role to play in a financial crisis. Do they? And if so, what is that role?
Well, they should make sure that they limit their resources to institutions that are well managed, and that they don't extend these loans for a long period of time. I mean, you can go to the history back to some of the original ideas on what's called lender of last resort, which is the role that a central bank is supposed to play. The central bank obviously is the Federal Reserve in the U.S. And that was precisely what the role of a central bank was supposed to be. That was it's a gentleman by the name of Badgett, who was quoted a lot during the crisis, that developed these ideas. But I think the Federal Reserve completely bastardized that whole concept, and they twisted it around to the extent where not only good institutions were going to get funding in a short run period of time, but they somehow twisted it around such that these poorly managed institutions like AIG and Bear Stearns and the whole range of Fannie and Freddie were going to be the recipients of federal largesse.
You write, quote, "The goal of both the Obama administration proposal and the Dodd-Frank legislation was to instill certainty, confidence, and trust in the financial system that had been badly damaged throughout 2008 and 2009. The release of the legislation was at the time of increasing uncertainty in the financial markets amid concerns about the languishing and slow-growth economy during the summer of 2010. The legislation has done little to reduce that uncertainty, and in fact, not unlike the intervention during the 2000s crisis, actually may have increased uncertainty," end quote. So then, in your estimation, is Dodd-Frank a failure?
Well, there were two primary issues related to the bailouts in the Dodd-Frank legislation. The first one, President Obama had said that we've put an end to taxpayer bailouts once and for all. And, I mean, that's a pretty ridiculous notion. the idea that some future Congress is going to be limited by some Dodd-Frank legislation that's passed in 2010 is not a really realistic idea. What I found in reviewing the history is, as you noted before, is that they usually have an institution that approaches failure, usually a big one, or there's a system-wide crisis, and they pass new legislation. So this idea that they're going to put an end to taxpayer bailouts just by passing legislation during 2010 just doesn't really add up. And the second part of Dodd-Frank was the creation of yet another agency. There were a number of agencies that were created under Dodd-Frank, but in particular related to bailouts, there was this new creation called the Financial Stability Oversight Council. And essentially the role of that council was to be an early warning system and kind of watch out for the whole industry, the whole financial industry, and even non-financial institutions that might cause problems if they were to fail going forward. And if you look at the history, just the short history since Dodd-Frank was passed a year and a half ago, the most recent example we had of a financial institution that approached failure was MF Global, which was this institution that former Senator and Governor Corzine was the was the lead on it.
Mm-hmm.
And MF Global filed bankruptcy for October 31st. So if you were to think, well, this was an early warning system, we would assume that the Financial Stability Oversight Council would have either weeks or months before the filing would have kind of analyzed the situation with MF Global. But of course, they did take it up eventually at the Financial Stability Oversight Council, but they took it up on October 31st, which was the exact day they filed
right.
bankruptcy. So it hasn't been a very effective early warning system to kind of prevent these situations where you're bouncing around all panicked. It was just a repeat of the way it had been done during the crisis.
Now, you mentioned in an earlier answer about the need to stop the taxpayer bailouts, that was the goal. What can be done to reduce the needs for bailouts in the future?
I think it's not necessarily a piece of legislation or that you'd pass or a piece of legislation or law that you would repeal that's going to make the situation better. What you're going to need is people in the main positions, whether it's Treasury Secretary or FDIC Chairman or head of the Fed, during the next crisis. Those are the important positions, and it's going to take people in those positions that really understand the history of it, which is pretty clear, is that these bailouts keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time we have a financial crisis, and they cover more and more institutions back into the Depression. It used to be just the commercial banks that were covered, and then it became a little broader in that Fannie Mae failed in the early 80s, and it was covered, and then the Farm Credit System. Well, that got a bailout in the 80s, and then now with this most recent crisis, you had just about every type of financial institution you can imagine, whether it's commercial banks or investment banks or insurance companies or hedge funds, which there was one hedge fund that failed in the late 90s, a few years before the most recent crisis. So they get bigger and bigger every time. They cost more. And, of course, every time we have one of these crises, they pass new laws, and the argument is, well, we're going to put an end to these bailouts. We're not going to do them anymore. And, of course, the pattern of repeated history is that we just keep bailing them out over and over again. So it's going to take people that understand that whole history, that understand that it's just kind of a short-term fix, but it causes a lot of bad consequences in the long run to do the bailouts.
Can you elaborate on those long-term consequences? Because that's the phase that we seem to be in now. And with our economy, the way that it is and people are struggling, what are these long-term effects and how can we begin to turn it around?
Well, yeah, when you're in the midst of it, it's a little difficult to tell what the long-term consequences are. One good example of it would be back in the 80s, there was a bailout of Continental Illinois, which was a big Chicago bank. And a few years earlier, there was a bank in New York called Franklin National Bank and another bank in Philadelphia. So it was the start of the whole idea of too big to fail. This was between the,
right.
the mid-70s and the mid-80s. And the lesson that was taken away from that was, well, if we want to make sure that we're going to get a bailout, then we have to make sure that we're one of the largest institutions in the country. So what you saw in the aftermath of the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s was in the mid and late 90s was a lot of consolidation in the industry, so that you had what were called these big mega banks, they referred to them as, which are the J.P. Morgans, the Bank of America,
right.
The Wachovias, just these enormous institutions that if they got to the brink of failure, they would get bailed out. So the long-term consequence was sending this signal that, you know, it's good to be big, and if you're big, you're assured that you're going to get bailed out next time around. So it might have seemed like it was a good idea back in the mid-'80s to bail out these institutions in the 70s, but the long-term consequences were pretty bad. As far as the most recent crisis you had, Bear Stearns was really the first bailout, and there were a lot of longer-term consequences of you know, just bailing out the institution in that short weekend in March of 2008. Probably the biggest lesson that was sent from that was you really don't have to prepare for failure. You can you know, just get a bailout from the government, just like Bear Stearns did. And there's some pretty clear evidence that, that Lehman Brothers, which was on the brink of failure there in September of 2008, kind of took this attitude that, well, we don't really have to prepare for failure because we're going to get a bailout. And there's a lot of details from information from the Lehman board where they just kind of assumed that they were going to get bailed out. So, again, you make these short-term decisions where it seems like the problem goes away, but they always have the long-term consequences that go with it, whether it manifests itself a few months later or a few years later or a few decades later. It eventually comes home to roost.
I have a burning question, and I'm just not sure if I should ask it, but it seems to most of Main Street that a lot of Wall Street is in bed with the White House. Thus, you see all of these bailouts and why some of the warning bells, you know, don't happen in time. How can we even the playing field, so to speak, and have it work the way that it's supposed to work rather than having those considerations?
Well, you're right on the political front. I mean, this is like a left-right coalition that takes this attitude. On the left, you have the Occupy Wall Street, which one of their biggest focuses has been on the bailouts. I mean, they have this kind of general feel that the system is rigged, and you know, that's one aspect of Occupy Wall Street that I would certainly agree with. And then on the right, you have a lot of the people that are against the bailouts because it kind of completely goes against any ideas of a free market. So as far as the problems of I've called it cafeteria capitalists in the book. This is the types of people that are capitalists when things are going really well in the economy, and they certainly like the government not to be involved, but they're the first ones that go running hat in hand to the government when there are problems. And as part of my litigation, I was able to dig out quite a few emails from these types of people, and they would essentially lay out a laundry list of all the things that they wanted the government to do to help them out. And, I mean, that's a very entrenched situation. And I don't think there's an easy answer in these interconnections. It's like a corporatist type of system that we have right now, and it's going to take a long time for the people that have this affliction of cafeteria capitalism. They're certainly not going to give it up overnight, and the people in the government who probably to some extent rely on these people to give them ideas and advice on how to deal with these crises, they're not going to give that up easily. I mean, Secretary Paulson was famous for being on the phone so much of the time talking to his former buddies in the industry, and you know, whether they were the Goldman Sachs colleagues that he had in the past or others that he knew in the industry. So it's so tightly interconnected that there's no real easy answer to that challenge.
Vern McKinley, author of Financing Failure, A Century of Bailouts, thank you for being our guest tonight. Where can we find you online and continue to follow your work?
Well, the book Financing Failure is published by Independent Institute, and their website is independent.org, or you can go on Amazon and just type my name in, Vern McKinley, V-E-R-N, and last name is McKinley.
Excellent. Thank you for being our guest tonight. We appreciate your time.
Okay, great. Thank you again.